it was very woke when they, you know, use anti-Fidel Castro Cubans to kill JFK. as we all know, the CIA has a long history of, you know, hiring people of color.
Mm-hmm. Look, JFK was just a mayo-ass white boy who didn't know his place and didn't want to uplift POC voices.
Yeah, they didn't want to, you know, they couldn't use a white guy to kill Fred Hampton. They had to, you know, get a real informant in there. And, you know, that's why they're always having people of different colors and genders. And,
we'll see when they, you know, when they recruited those Italian mafia guys to kill Fidel Castro in like the 50s, that was just because that was before Italians were granted whiteness.
Right.
So on the like, you know, the privilege hierarchy of the 1950s, Italians were actually lower, so it would have been punching mm-hmm. up for them to kill Fidel Castro.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, the CIA used to be so good at that kind of social justice arithmetic, and they've just really lost sight of it. But I think they're finally pivoting back in with their new operation MK Ultra Woke. They've just announced.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is BP Bledis. Hello, everybody. We got the whole gang here. Today we're looking at this video from the CIA called Humans of CIA doing the fun.
Bots of New York.
Yeah. Russian bots of CIA.
I'm a millennial. I'm a woman. I am white passing Latina. My father was definitely not involved in the Project Paperclip with the Nazis going to South America.
Yeah. My grandfather was in the Batista government.
I have fibromyalgia.
My third cousin is a clone of Hitler.
Yeah. He's a boy from Brazil. So yeah, they released this video, called Humans of CIA, and it's basically just this one woman saying that she is an intersectional person.
Oh yeah, it's more like human of CIA. That's the only person of color they could find.
She says I am intersexual, and then she says I'm a cisgender millennial. I love the intersection of being cis and like young / middle aged. Like,
yeah, cis and 29. Wow.
I've struggled with imposter syndrome.
This is just a who's who of like internet buzzwords that have gone around in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm.
Did I feel like an imposter when I propped up an imposter dictator in Cuba? Well, yes, but you know, I think it was just our place to
but,
do so.
Yeah, I'm not going to apologize for the space that I occupy. Yeah.
Right.
I can't That's confirm this, one. But I'm pretty sure I tweeted about Juan Guaido having imposter syndrome. So yeah, CIA, please fork over those royalties.
Yeah, that we you know our PayPal.
Yeah, you can't fucking steal tweets, you losers.
That's right.
No, but I think this video, you know, this video has been getting a lot of discussion going on Twitter and in the social media and stuff. I actually saw it in Mid's posting first. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, this video really sort of is the nail in the coffin of anybody trying to portray woke language as a tool of the left. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think mm-hmm. wokeness has always been a far right project to like get emancipatory language to fit inside far right structures, to be like, oh, absolutely. Well, when we say inclusion, what we mean is like the fascist dream of everybody having their own country and like oppressing their own, you know, oppressed classes. And like it doesn't just by saying we have Latinas in our organization.
Right.
No one ever said like no one on the left ever said like that's what we want. Mm-hmm. And
more,
so I think,
yeah, more black capitalism is what the communists yeah. want, you know, like
it's,
yeah, exactly.
And it's designed specifically so that if you point out the fact that that's exactly what they're doing, they say, oh, well, you must be racist. You must be reactionary. It's like pointing out that like using the language of anti-racism, anti-sexism,
yeah,
to sell a product, in this case sell the CIA and doing yeah. a CIA career
a
to
fascist
to
white
young
supremacist
people, like using that that's and criticizing the use of that to sell that product, that has nothing to do that either side of that, like the use of it or the criticism of it has right. nothing to do with the actual like doing any sort of like actual organizing work. It's literally an aesthetic argument. And like Bryn said, the woke side of that has always been a way to just co-opt the language that organizers and people who are on the left and trying to fight against injustice use, and then just subsuming it into this this corporate government kind of public partnership machine that just continues the slow march of imperialism.
Well, what I mean, there's a lot of facets to this, because like a lot of stuff that ends up what we would like look at it now as like and call it woke language, like is originally pioneered by people who are trying to navigate really tricky ideas and like assess power systematically. But then people get this idea in their head, they're like, well, shit, I could actually try and take a stand where I address the problems that perpetuate like racism and sexism and all kinds of bigotry, or I could police me and my friend's language. And it's like, I understand there's an idea that it's like, if we were all just at the point where we weren't using that kind of horrible language, that would mean everything was better. And it's like, that's true, but you don't get there by changing the language. You get there by changing the behavior of the systems, and people's like social norms follow in the wake of material relations. I don't know if this is too Marxist for people to understand or whatever, but like, I think it's true. Like,
I don't know if you know this, but if this is the first time listening, this is a communist show. So, you know, just be ready for that. But yeah, I think you're right. But I think the thing about it is like the concept of what I think what people mean when they say woke, you know, like as a cultural milieu, is what I think people meant, like communists meant when they said intersectionality minus class. Mm-hmm. Like it's not that people who want to add class back into intersectionality are class first or class reductionist. They just want to include the thing that the fascists actually want to exclude, and that's why it gets so hard of pushback.
Right. Yeah, the biggest success that the like kind of woke psyop ever had was convincing all of your like left Facebook friends that scolding people online for not knowing the exact right social signifiers to like show other people that they are hip to whatever the latest like social justice lingo is the same as being Fred Hampton. Like convincing all of like the kind of soft brained young people, because like when you're young, right, I think you are more susceptible to this shit. Not that there aren't young people who are like see through this like veil, but when you're young, you're more susceptible to this shit. And I've literally seen the take that it's like online people who just spend all their time like scolding like people they view as problematic are like the same as doing the same work as, I don't know, some like the fucking Black Panthers doing like a school lunch program or something. Right. It's insane. If Fred Hampton was alive, he would literally be a left book admin.
It's all about the class element, right? Like this whole co-optation of like woke language and like social justice language and anything, like it's not all woke. Like one, woke is an incoherent signifier that means different
That's
things
right.
to different groups.
Doesn't mean anything.
And like two, like things that are actually woke, like have a class element. And that's one of the reasons that like this whole thing is so perverse, is because they're not removing the class element. They want you to think they're removing the class element, but they're sneaking it back in. What is this CIA video if not expressing a potential class relationship for a person from an ethnic minority? Oh, yeah. They're saying you can work at the CIA. You can make CIA money.
You can be in the ruling class.
You can become the elite.
She's talking about how she's like well-educated and stuff. It's not like if you're actually like poor and a high school graduate, you can work at the CIA. You got to rise up through the ranks.
Yeah. If you say all the right things, you too can join the elites. It's goes back to the concept of woke bootstrapping that I'm always talking about. It's like the flip side of that is if you like fail, if you come from a poor background and you don't decide to like say all the right things and apply for the right internship so that you can become like part of either the ruling class or just like the PMC that propped them up, like then you squandered your privilege. You weren't woke enough. It's you deserve it. It is just literally the rebranding of like neocon ideology, saying you deserve your station in life if life sucks for you. But with a woke facade.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, they're trying to flatten everything out to a moral argument, right? They're like, look, there's this Latina woman in the CIA, so if you are non-white and you, you know, aren't in the CIA, that's on you. You didn't work hard enough. Yeah. It reduces everything to a moral argument, which is very convenient. And liberals like to say that conservatives are the ones who are always making the moral arguments, but liberals are just as fucking like moralistic and like weirdly, perversely humanist as conservatives, like, period. They just express it a little differently.
They're the same political ideology with different like social, you know, cues. But I think the thing about this video is that it's not even, it has nothing to say about like I think the important thing is that there has to be some differentiation between a far right ideology and like being aware of racism and centering, or whatever, however you want to say, like, oppressed people in any communist movement. Like, we have to be understanding, like, that's good. And I think the thing is like, most people, anyone who's listening to this, isn't fooled by the CIA video. No one is watching this thinking like,
right, it's insanely shallow.
The CIA is woke now. I think that means they're on the left. You have to be a complete dipshit to think that, or you have to be a very dishonest right winger who's trying to, you know,
well, that's the thing,
do
though,
some sort of whitewashing.
I think you're right. It's like, we absolutely have to prioritize like listening to oppressed voices, like, not least of all just as a strategical move, because they have the most experience with the kinds of oppression we're trying to fight. Like, if you don't know what something is, you can't fight it. But like, that kind of positioning and that kind of like social and political arrangement doesn't come from like some hegemonic national imperial organization appointing someone and then being like, look, we did it. from like the internal fucking social and political relations of, you know, revolutionary organizations and political organizations.
But I think I think the insidious part of this is that the concepts around fighting for racial justice and, you know, queer justice have now been reduced to representation statistics, like how many people in the PSL are black or queer, and it's like, well, are they in leadership positions? Like, this is that kind of like head counting and like face counting is this sort of like unnecessary, like it's not helpful.
It's also like
it's
a patronizing kind of bigotry too.
Yeah,
that's why I cringe when you guys say centering voices as if that's the be all end all. If you want to help someone, you just need to center their voice. That, and then everything else will fall into place, right?
Yeah,
that's the idea that's being pushed here. Centering somebody's voice doesn't fucking mean anything other than holding them up as like a model minority. If you want to help somebody, you need to improve their material conditions. And like, I guess there is like an implicit concept that, yeah, I mean, if you center somebody's voice, that means they get to tell you how best to improve their material conditions. But I think for these like people who this CIA video works on, the concept of centering voices is the be all end all. All you need to do is put this person in the spotlight, give them 15 minutes of fame to complain about what's shitty in their life, and then your job is done. You don't need to worry about it. You don't need to worry about improving anybody's material conditions or doing an analysis of the class character that led to this person having to have their voice centered. You just needed to center their voice, and that sucks ass.
I don't want to have to be like bullied around by the liberals stealing all my fucking words, right? Like, if the liberals are like, centering voices means you're done, I'm just like, no, you're wrong. Shut the fuck up, liberal. Go away. Like, you know, like, I don't need that kind of shit in my life. Yeah. No negativity zone, lib. Like,
don't even accept their framing. It's not about centering voices. It's about improving people's material condition.
Yeah. It's about putting people in power.
That's correct. To find out what people are going through in order to help them, right? Like, if you were just like, if you're like vigilante activist and you show up in like a predominantly, like, let's say a community I wouldn't be familiar with, and it's me, so I'd be like in like a predominantly, you know, non-white, let's say like Southwestern American town that has all kinds of like political and racial things, like, you know, no investigation, no right to speak. I need to find out what's going on in that community before I just start trying to throw my weight around. But that's not the same as like the whole liberal, like, let's hear what they have to say and then we'll form a committee to deliberate whether or not legislation might be appropriate and at what level. Like, that's
right.
That's just garbage. Like,
this is what I'm saying, is that like the I think one of the most devious tricks that this kind of stuff does is remove the actual Vanguard party type of politics off the table.
That's
it's
right.
Like, okay, yeah. Well, how do we as a country, or we as a city, or we as a community create actual power and put people who have the lowest stance in their community and put them in the power? How do you do that? What does that mean?
By,
and what does it look like?
It's by creating a list of who can talk when.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. Exactly. And this kind
it's
of
by
stuff.
By retweeting D-Ray.
Yeah, and, that's right. And I've talked about this, you know, earlier, you know, many episodes ago in the podcast. Like, this is what happened at Occupy in real time. Mm-hmm. Like, on the first day of Occupy, immediately this sort of like understanding of organization formed, a tech group formed, housing group formed, like how to stay and hold this like space. And then all of a sudden, very well-dressed white people showed up and said, actually, we need to have this person talk for 30 minutes. And like what? Talk about what? What are you saying? And it's like, oh, well, they're a minority, and so they have to talk. And then they were like, their friend, who was also a well-dressed person, and said a whole bunch of stuff about how we needed to, you know, tax people more,
wait,
or whatever.
Wait, white people have never selectively boosted the voices of minorities that agree with them to get something racist to happen. That's never happened.
Yeah.
So that's the point. So like the concept of centering voices as a be-all, end-all, like,
is a part of
goal.
This.
Yeah. It's like, that's how they frame it. Because they want you to be like, well, we should center voices, but we should do it in a, no. Fuck talking about centering voices or any of these concepts. Like, it's the end goal. The end goal is making people's lives better.
You really want this person's voice centered? Give them a gun. Give them a gun. And then we'll all listen to them. You know,
it would be a shame if an unfortunate accident occurred at the meeting where you weren't centering the right voices.
Yeah. And by material conditions, before I mean like removing the boot of the oppressor off of their community, right?
Relation
like,
to power,
like you have, that means having to remove the material
police.
Conditions of the
usually
oppressors,
the police.
Right? Like, police.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, they all have every conversation about diversity, except like the police kill non-white people a lot. Like, and that needs to stop. And that's like one of the main forms of oppression. Like, nobody wants to have that conversation. They're trying to have every conversation about race and identity that they can have that doesn't cost anybody any money, especially the police department budget.
Or doesn't change the balance of power in any way.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't actually empower anybody who's poor or imprisoned or actually repressed by the state in any way. So it's a complicated conversation, and I'm glad this happened, honestly, just because I think it should be a line in the sand of like, look, this kind of behavior doesn't help anybody. This can easily be co-opted and has always been a tool of the far right to get people to try and separate people along race lines so that they can be separated along class lines, because that's how our state is set up. So I think it should be obvious to anybody watching this, like, what this represents. But it is very funny, I have to say.
Well, speaking of a man who attempted to have his own voice centered, Kid Rock. Kid Rock, a musician who we're all huge fans of on the show, has a restaurant or a bar called Kid Rock's Big Honky Tonk, you know, steakhouse rock and roll fuck fest or whatever.
You're almost, big ass in, badass guns and
it's
trucks.
Kid Rock's
and
big ass honky tonk rock and roll steakhouse on Lower Broadway
in Nashville. If you've ever been to Nashville, you know that Broadway is like the place where just it's like being in a college town when they win like a big basketball game or something. It is but every night, they call it Nash Vegas. It's huge crowds of people. They're all vomiting. There's men just like, you know, literally just like catcalling any woman they see. Okay. Like really
all
debaucherous
the toilets
stuff.
Are these big troughs dug into the sides of the streets.
No, it's disgusting. But a guy apparently at Kid Rock's bar was arrested for removing his colostomy bag and swinging it around.
Oh, maybe they were listening to Petey Pablo.
Look, I don't think people should be arrested, but I do think something needs to be done about a guy swinging his full colostomy bag around in a crowd.
Maybe it was Willow Smith. I whip my bag back and forth.
Oh man, I haven't thought about that song since it came out like 9 years ago.
I don't even know.
That's the best.
Still the police scanner's like, male took off his colostomy bag and started swinging it at others. Some units have feces on them.
Units?
This is the third time I've heard this colostomy bag guy in the past two nights.
This guy's making lemonade out of lemons, I guess.
This guy is a local problem. This guy is a local problem, though. That's like, you know how you go to a town and like, there's a tweet about this. Like a guy with a huge beard will skateboard by and you'll be like, who's that? And they'll be like, oh yeah, that's Skateboard Jesus. And there's no further explanation.
Yeah.
But like this town has colostomy bag guy. Like, not
I'd
cool
like to imagine
like,
he was
a bicycle guy or anything. Yeah.
I like to imagine he was doing like a karaoke routine to one of Kid Rock's songs, and then he's just started whipping his colostomy bag out and playing it like an air guitar.
Oh no.
Sometimes the spirit moves you. You gotta do what rock and
that's
roll
right.
tells you to do, and you don't care about what authority thinks. That's like the Kid Rock message, right? Just fuck authority, do whatever you want.
That's what Gigi Allen would be doing if he were still alive. He would be like in a wheelchair with a colostomy bag, but he would still be rocking and rolling.
Mm-hmm. Somehow like injecting heroin into the colostomy bag and it travels back into his body.
Jesus. That's really
this fucking, and by the way, this article is supposed to be like, it's from something called whiskeyriff.com. And I think they're supposed to be like, didn't the officers do a good job? Weren't the officers being funny on Twitter about this while it happened? It's like, no, they told
fuck
the
off.
Worst jokes possible. Like they didn't even think of good. It was like my dad on Twitter, what I imagine that would be like.
What would your dad be like on Twitter?
He would be just like a cop without any institutional power. It would be awful.
He would just be quote tweeting things about like protesters and be like, well, they should have followed the curfew. Serves them right.
The about us part of whiskeyriff.com is unfiltered and in your face. We are the voice of the country music fan, the fan of the outdoors, and for all those who need a good laugh, a hot take, and a strong drink, the most entertaining country site ever.
What's a country hot take?
We're a country that just, website.
That just sounds like what my Tinder bio would be like if I had a Tinder bio.
It's fucking
love the outdoors, love country music. Love drinking whiskey. Love guns.
I got hot takes. I got hot coffee and I got cold beers.
Yeah,
that's right.
Also, why does on the top of the website the Whiskey Riot symbol is like has red stripes, but then you go down and there's one with like
blue stripes.
They have like a Blue Lives Matter logo too. It's a little suspect.
It looks weirdly like a South American like youth, like a Chavista youth.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
you know I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was just like an arm patch on someone's military uniform.
To give you an idea of the target audience for this website, in their merch store, they have a shirt with a tent and a campfire on it, and it's labeled "Smoke Meat, Not Meth."
Oh, so it must be a website for Mark Zuckerberg.
Mm-hmm. He loves smoking meats.
Yeah, he does.
Loves the meat chef.
Oh man, I gotta say, I moused over the podcast section, and their podcast is called Whiskey Riff Raff. And every screen cap is like a Zoom call of just the most white boy summer shit you've seen.
Is that the fabled Whiskey Brothers podcast?
The Whiskey Brothers podcast.
Where are we sipping the whiskey?
Guys with like a farmer's tan sunburn that just looks like they opened up the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah. Boiling skin.
I guarantee every single one of these dudes' Tinder profiles is just 19 photos of them with different fish.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Mark Zuckerberg, we found a Gallup poll with not a lot of, it's just one little part of the results, but there was a Gallup poll that says Americans' view of technology companies by party identification. Next, please say whether your overall view of technology companies such as Amazon, Facebook, and Google is very positive, somewhat positive, neutral, somewhat negative, or very negative.
Yeah, this was between August 2019 and January, February of 2021. So between, so like a couple months before COVID to just a couple months ago, this shows the change in general, like outlook and like kind of just public approval of big tech companies. And I brought this up because the change is insane. And it like, actually, it's I think it reflects
the Democrats stayed exactly the same.
Yeah. Okay. So between 2019
everything's the same.
2019 and now, the general like view of technology companies, like approval wise for Republicans has gone from positive by 6 points, right? Percentage points to negative 45.
Yeah,
it's like the, everyone decided they don't like them.
43% positive to 20% positive.
For independents, went from 10% positive in 2019 to negative 11% positive now.
Those are the libertarians who lost their crypto.
Mm-hmm. It went down by 1 point, which is within the margin of error for this poll.
Yeah, Democrats love big tech, but they are already at the ceiling of ecstasy with their approval of big tech, so they can't possibly go any higher.
Oh yeah.
Right. I do wonder what this must have been like if there was a poll like this in 2016, like when Trump won, and what that would have looked like.
Facebook led Russians on to stop Queen Hillary from winning.
Yeah.
Thumbs down.
And if Republicans would have been so positive because they're like, hey, you make Trump win. Everyone's talking about Trump. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Republicans really turned on big tech. Not that they ever really, like the thing about Republicans is that they tend to be, at least culturally, like we're supposed to be for the working man, the white working class, you know, that's supposedly we want to start a small business or whatever, but they generally like people succeeding and they generally tend to think like, oh, well, you know, Bezos did a hard work. He grew his business and he deserves it. Elon Musk or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Google and every fucking internet big tech site turning against Trump, I think was a huge, blow to their faith that they were, you know, there to take care of them or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's really amazing the way the Democrats, I mean, like, I feel bad for ever accusing the Democrats of being incompetent because the way that they have managed to continue Trump's policies while using him as like a quilting point, like a totem of like negativity that unifies all of the, or like, you know, ostensibly unifies all of the narratives into this like most progressive presidency ever just based on people's like last 4 years political memory. Like it's honestly, if I wasn't so disgusted by it, I would be like, it's masterful. It's a masterclass in politics.
It's a kind of Iago type move. Mm-hmm.
It is incredible because it's like you say, it's not even really like political memory. It's like emotional memory. It's like for 4 years of Trump, you were always upset and mad when you read the news. And now the news is a boring grandpa. And whatever he's doing, you don't really care because he's saying he's not the same as Trump and he's acting differently. So he must be different.
Yeah. It's like, well, Trump made politics feel like libidinal and like immediate to a lot of people, whether they loved him or hated him. Like there was a real fucking sense of immediacy there. And now that political heat, that's the lost object. And like having the object be removed is like what lets everything go back to normal, even though shit is just getting crazier by the fucking day under the Biden administration.
Well, I think this kind of reflects that 2020 we saw a complete alignment of big tech with the Democratic Party. And like you said, in 2016 I'm sure the numbers would have been completely opposite, which is why this Gallup poll does not show any numbers further back than 2019.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's interesting. I think that what I want to see is how this proceeds in the next couple of years, whether big tech can basically just kind of, I don't know, force these people out of like the discourse, the mainstream kind of like sphere of social media and stuff. And what happens when like basically half the country just feels like not only the government, but also all technology is just like stacked against them, which I mean, really basically is the case. We talked about it at the beginning of the episode. The Democrats have, you know, aligned with Silicon Valley, and they're using woke rhetoric to make you think that they're good, and then they're doing evil. Like John said, they're doing the same thing that the Trump administration was doing, but they're in more insidious about it. They're doing it with a woke facade. Worse. So yes, exactly. I agree. So what I want to see is, like, over the next couple of years, what's going to happen? Is it going to be like my long running theory that it's going to be like a million little Kaczynskis? Is it going to be, which I would be unironically good, is it going to be that these people just gradually get slowly assimilated as, you know, the techno-feudal state figures out a way to offer them a little something? What do you guys think is going to happen?
They're going to keep marginalizing us with Bellingcat operative Twitch debate streamers. That's what they're going to do. There's going to be a million little destinies and socialism done lefts and vouches and shit running around.
The absolute worst.
That unfortunately is a lot more likely, because it's like their opposition to technology companies is insanely shallow. It's just that they didn't put the right big wet boy up on the screen, so they just need like to be laser targeted with like something that they like coming from technology companies, from Google and Twitter and Amazon and whatever, and then they'll be happily back at the trough. I mean, or they might still, I don't know, it's like, how many people who use Twitter every day have like a positive view of Twitter as a company? People are like addicted to these sites, whether they respect them or think they're good or not.
I think you have to remember that people like the Republicans, people who identify as Republicans and cared about Trump, literally have the same motivations as Democrats. People who consider themselves Democrats are like Kamala, Yas Queen people. They don't have any more political like motivation. Like, I don't think these people are, you know, I don't think they're on the edge of, you know, storming into, you know, a police station or an Amazon warehouse and shooting it up any more than, you know, a 90s Gen Xer who hated TV was going to, you know what I mean? Because it's, this cultural signification. Because in the 90s, when it was the Reagan and before Clinton and H.W. Bush, like the thing was, is like, fuck television. We all hate the tube that's like filling our brains with all of this like capitalist shit. Like, they weren't going to do anything either. Anybody who's like obsessed with the game show of is my team winning, they're going to be mad and they're going to hate they're going to correctly identify the people who are stopping their team from being cool and winning, but they're not going to do anything about it because they're just voters.
Yeah, well, they think they're fighting each other. They think they're having a culture war against each other. But like, if you're having a culture war, like a culture, like not an economic, not like a relations of production war, then you are playing against the House, the United States government, and its media apparatuses and all of that shit. You're sitting at the blackjack table thinking that the guy next to you is your enemy. Just like, leave the blackjack table.
I will never leave the blackjack
table. Never leave the blackjack
Do
table.
Do not leave. Take the House for all it's worth.
Just a couple hands away from winning all my money back.
Even
I
if
can
one
count
of them-
cards. John, you're playing online. You can't count cards online.
Look, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm doing it right now. I'm winning.
And even if there is a tussle that breaks out among, you know, the people at the table, like the fucking dealer doesn't give a shit. They'll just, you know, settle people down. But I mean, I don't think you're going to get people mad enough at big tech who are like this kind of voter to get to a place where they're saying, we're going to attack the systems that made this happen.
Well, because they take that energy to the ballot box. And here's the thing about taking energy to the ballot box. It doesn't matter how much fucking energy is in your ballot. It's still one vote that's probably not getting counted anyway.
The ballot box is the one place that energy can be destroyed. Contrary to like the laws of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, speaking of a reason why people don't trust big tech and don't trust the corporate media, this opinion comes to us from Kathleen Kingsbury of the New York Times. They're apparently retiring the word op-ed.
Oh, no.
I don't know what we'll do without op-eds to no make more fun opinions. Of. This podcast is going to be over. I don't know what we would talk about. But it's it's clear to me that it's just another way to obfuscate the truth, to present opinion as fact, to just continue to whip people up into a frenzy about shit that doesn't matter, and to do it more insidiously. I mean, now the New York Times is seeing places like Facebook and Substack and Twitter as competitors competing for the eyeball time of their readers. So I think this heralds kind of a larger shift into New York Times is moving away from being like a newspaper and more just they're going to be a content mill.
They're going to be a social network.
This is what the signals. Yeah.
I'm going to log on to my New York Times account to see my friends' baby pictures.
Gross.
What does op-eds mean? Like, does anybody remember what it stands for?
Yeah, yeah. She said
science
in the beginning,
and philosophy. It's Latin.
that it was so called because it appears like opposite of the editorial. Like, there's the editorial page, and then on the other side, there's the opposite of the editorial.
Oh my God, it's oppositional editorial?
No, that's what she's saying. It's not oppositional, it's opposite. As in, it's like on the other side of the page.
Right, but
they don't oppose the editorials at all.
A website doesn't have sides. It has directories.
Yeah.
So now it should be a sub-ed.
Yeah.
For subdirectory.
Right.
So they're going to call them guest essays, right? So next, you're going to see a headline that's going to make it's going to make you extremely mad, and it's going to be presented as fact, and then in very small print, way buried in that article, it's going to be, this is a guest essay.
Smoking kills. Please, Surgeon General's warning.
Be polite to our guest. What, would you be rude to a guest in your own home if they brought you a nice essay? Be kind to Mr. Brett Stevens with this one.
Yeah, he's a guest in our home. We only pay him $500,000 a year to be our guest. We tie a napkin around his neck, Sherry, and then he provides the rest. I don't know. This seems silly. What's the point of it?
Oh, to seem like they're doing something. It's make work. It's like part in Spaceballs where he's like, you henchman pushing a bunch of buttons pretending to work.
Yeah.
And that's like what the New York Times has made their money doing. Just manufacturing consent and doing make work.
Well, speaking of presenting opinions as fact, Brookline, Mass., which is like a really rich suburb of Boston, basically, the second most educated town in the entire country, has decided to overrule the CDC and keep an outdoor mask mandate in place. Just for reference, I mean, CDC, Fauci, everybody says, I mean, even people that we trust, like not that we trust the CDC and Fauci, but like everybody is saying that outdoor transmission like doesn't exist. Like you would have to like cough into somebody's mouth outdoors to transmit COVID just because of the way that like confined spaces cause air particles to like circulate. Whereas outside it's fucking outside. So I bring this up because this is a very affluent suburb with a bunch of rich people that have very good health care. And they're mandating everybody continue to wear masks outside, even though the science very clearly says that you don't need to wear a mask outside unless you are like having a direct conversation with somebody like a foot or two away. Mm-hmm. And to me, that indicates rich people just want to they want to use COVID to signal how virtuous they are, which disgusts me.
Now that the vaccines have become sort of more widespread, I mean, you know, New York City is almost, I think, 45% vaccinated. Mm-hmm. There has been this weird thing where, here's the thing. All throughout the pandemic, right-wingers have been screaming about how masks are virtue signaling. And it's like, that's not true. Like there is a reason to use masks for the purposes that they're useful. But now it has become this weird thing where it is true. And people are being like, well, it's polite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It you want to like make sure people feel safe around you. And it's like, well, it seems like I feel like now I'm trusting the science like you've been telling me to, but you're not trusting the science because you're scared. And yeah, it's like, right. It's okay to be scared. I totally understand why you would continue to be scared. We've just gone through an incredibly traumatic thing as a world and a humanity, and we've had to do a lot of traumatic things, and everyone's fucked up and scared. But trying to say that somebody is, when they say now they're the ones who are saying, oh, Dr. Fauci's lying, oh, the CDC is lying because I'm scared. And it's like, look, we have to be able to agree on something here. If it's safe to go outside not wearing a mask, especially post-vaccination.
Right, that's the thing. I think that is their stance. They were like, you can go outside without a mask if you've been vaccinated, except in large crowds, which is like a little vague. And they're basically like, if there's not many people around and you've been vaccinated, perfectly fine. Don't wear a mask. And some people are like, but I still want to.
I mean, this is just the fucking Republicans and Democrats collaborating through fake antagonism, where the Republicans, especially, and I'm not talking about Republican voters. I'm sure they're complicit in it on their end or whatever, but I'm talking about the media, the sides of the media.
Yeah.
The Republican side is just like, oh, the masks are a culture war issue during a time when they're absolutely necessary. And then once they become less necessary, the Democrats are like, we are absolutely not going to miss out on the steam of this culture war issue. Yeah. We are going to wear these masks until 2024. And it's like, make a scientific decision at some point in your life. Like, do you just like, I hate to be the guy who's like, turn off the TV, but like fucking like, don't listen to the fucking media.
I mean, like I said,
science is saying you don't need a mask outside, and these people, this town municipally is mandating that people wear masks outside. Like, they're doing that for a reason that is not scientific. I don't know if it's necessary that they're afraid. I think, like, you're right, Bryn. You made an incredibly valuable point, which is that
thank you.
The right started the virtue signaling accusations about masks. But at this point, the science is literally saying you don't need a mask walking around outside unless you are literally in a crowd. So for like good liberals in, you know, Boston Brahmin in Brookline, Massachusetts, the second richest town in the war in the country, to be mandating that everybody, not just as a personal choice, because you could do that. You could just choose to wear a mask outside, and I know plenty of people that do because, like, you know, it also prevents against, I guess, pollen in a lot of cases, but whatever. They're choosing to mandate that everybody do it. It's virtue signaling. And it's like, if you say virtue signaling, like these good libs will be like, well, what are you, right wing?
Well, that's the thing.
Virtue signaling is also a right wing accusation. But the way I see it is like, I go to a restaurant, right? I go to an indoor restaurant. I've only been to like two or three restaurants since all of COVID that I like went inside. I've been good. I've been a good, I'm a good boy,
but you've earned your good boy like, points.
I sit down and I'm allowed to take my mask off to sip my drink. Right. Well, and then when the waiter or waitress comes over, I put my mask on because it's like, I know that it's very unlikely that I would transmit COVID to you or you would transmit COVID to me in this brief interaction where you're standing probably like 6 feet away taking my order, but it's a sign of respect. It's like, I respect you enough to put this mask on when talking to you because you're a service employee and like you are in this situation. That on an interpersonal level, it's like you, me having a, you know, interaction at this restaurant where you work, whatever. That's great. For the city government to be mandating that you do this just tells me that like this extremely affluent suburb is full of the most insufferable neurotic people on earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, they want another reason to call the police on people. That's part of it feeling. Too. Mm. Yeah, it's like if they see somebody come like a poor, you know, who unfortunately due to lack of education are less likely to believe that COVID even fucking exists, you know, through no real fault of their own, comes into their neighborhood not wearing a mask, they want to be able to call the police to come assault that person.
Yeah,
because like, and that's not fucking acceptable, you know, like,
right. And
that's like the ultimate dream of a rich liberal is that you can like take any kind of thing that you deem like personal politeness and then mandate it through the state, you know.
It's exactly. Like, what I'm saying.
It's liberalism. It's justified retribution. And the only difference is that conservatives want to do it slightly outside the state. They want to be like, I want it to be legal but I need someone to break into my house so I can shoot them with my gun. And the liberals are like, I'd like to call the police on them, and they'll shoot them with their guns. And that's like the only difference between them.
Yeah, John, you're exactly right. It's just a rebranding of the tactic that like right-wing people have been using for years to scold service workers. It's Karen shit. It's like I had an experience like this at the very beginning of COVID where somebody was like, oh, you know, you're standing less than 6 feet away from me in this like cramped supermarket where it's literally impossible. And I'm like, I'm 5.5 feet away from them. And I'm like, we're all wearing masks. It's the beginning of COVID. Like everybody is terrified. And I'm like, I am standing as physically far apart as possible in this small enclosed space. I think that I said this person, I think you're genuinely just using this as an excuse to scold others. And little did I know how right I was, it would become fucking a municipal fucking mandate in some places to just scold people.
Well, not scold them, but like harass them with the law. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, everybody wants, anybody's rude, who gives a shit, but like,
well, what is the liberal wet dream other than being able to scold people with the full force of the monopoly of violence of the state behind you?
Exactly. So I don't know. I find this all very annoying because it's sort of shows and exploits, or it sort of exposes the real commonality between quote unquote conservatives or like alt-right and liberals. Like they're all the same people, just different culture war.
Stuff. Exactly. I've been saying this since the beginning of the fucking pandemic. A mask is not a totem of politics. It is a medical protective device. It is a piece of equipment that is to be used appropriately. Like that's what it is. Like, and use it like that.
And what's annoying about it all is we are living in a country where they have completely abandoned us. Like, I personally think the CDC, as far as I can tell, has been giving us mostly true information, and it seems they've fucked up a couple times, and they're like managing people's expectations like fucking an advertising agency. Like, it really seems to me that like if you get the vaccine,
they're doing spin.
If you get the vaccine and you have a very low chance of being able to spread it, and you have an almost non-existent chance of being able to get the get COVID. But they can't exactly say that because then they're afraid of what people will do, and they have this dumb like incentive to sort of like manage people with advertising techniques instead of just saying, this is what you have to do, this is what we want you to do, and if you don't, you know, because we don't live in a state that has any control or infrastructure.
Giving us the solutions to these problems instead of pablum, instead of spin, instead of mostly true information that doesn't come with any fucking help is cheaper. It doesn't set a precedent that we're actually to be helped in a crisis.
And so everybody is just doing this sort of like individualist, like I'm being moral and ethical by whatever I invented, by whatever my cultural milieu is saying. Like
I'm recycling harder than you. Like neighborhoods that have like a recycling enforcement. It's like, oh, if you don't recycle, you pay a fine or whatever.
But this isn't just recycling.
I'm wearing 3 masks, you fucking conservatard.
This is absolutely fucking life or death for some people, and people are just winging it. It's fucking frustrating.
Yeah. Well, the reason that, to go back to the point of like, the government is like, wait. No, just because you got vaccinated and like cases are low in your area doesn't mean things can go back to normal. I think is because like state governments, the federal government, they kind of like being able to use COVID as an excuse for why they can't deliver on everything else for people. Like they're focusing on making sure you're safe from COVID. They're focusing on the COVID response or like COVID vaccinations. They can't fix your roads. They can't like they can't make sure that like I don't know, local health care is adequate. They can't make education better because they're dealing with COVID. It's they're addicted to using that as an excuse for why the state is completely fucking non-functional. And it's I think it's starting to backfire because people are like, what do you mean? I got the vaccine, wearing the mask. I still like things still aren't fucking normal. what do you mean? Logically, like I don't know how much more people will take of this using COVID as an excuse to do austerity.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really honestly haven't heard a good explanation for like, you know, why can't a bunch of vaccinated people go to a party together and not wear masks? Like, you know, but like in certain places, they're like not opening certain things even for vaccinated people. And it's like, there's no way to check if you're vaccinated. There's no plan. You know what I mean? It's just mm-hmm. like, eventually we're going to have some thing called herd immunity, which isn't even that well studied. Well,
they did a story yesterday like, about how they're saying like, oh, we'll probably never reach herd immunity in the United States. Yeah. That was a front page story on the New York Times yesterday. We'll probably never reach herd immunity. If you're not fucking asking yourself why they're giving you all of these excuses, why they keep moving the goalposts. Oh, things can go back to normal after you get the vaccine. Oh, no, wait. We may never reach herd immunity, and it's Joe Rogan's fault or some bullshit like that. It's a constant pushing back of the goalposts because they don't want to go back to normal because, like, whatever we're living in now is beneficial to the ruling class.
Yeah, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk are making money fucking hand over fist. They've made more money between them than like the next 50 richest people in the world even have. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's so just like when the money is already that super concentrated by industry, that's the only like cash tap legislators and the judiciary and the executive branch fucking care about anymore. And that's why like, you know, the hidden politics of the United States is really just the politics of Amazon and Tesla and SpaceX and Google.
Speaking of the invisible hand of the market jerking itself off again because it's not doing this. The FDA is considering a ban on menthol cigarettes, and they're doing it. This is the most insane shit ever. It's like the state like butting in and telling you they're doing this for your best interests, but it's like insane. They want to ban menthols because they're like, oh, mostly the black community smokes menthol cigarettes. So if we ban menthol cigarettes, then the black community will smoke less cigarettes. So we're actually helping black people. It's disgusting. It's
bizarre.
Like,
it's such weird move.
I heard about
clearly
going
to be used to criminalize, you know,
of course.
Yeah.
I heard about this on Twitter a couple of days ago, but I didn't actually read it. I didn't realize it was a federal ban on menthol cigarettes. There's
which won't go into place until a couple of years from now, mm-hmm. but it's in the works.
Does that mean like the FBI is going to be investigating my local bodega and looking under the counter for fucking cigarettes?
For Newport? Are you kidding me? Like, this is absurd. I mean, this is like a bad SNL joke from the 90s. Like,
yeah, or from next week. Maybe Elon Musk will do a funny joke about it.
Yeah, maybe Elon Musk will write a good bit about this. I just feel this is so transparently like, well, we just legalized weed in the biggest city in the country. I guess we have to arrest and murder black people for something else. What else do they like? Menthol cigarettes, I guess. It's so insane. Yeah.
What did you say before we started rolling, Bryn? This is going to be an excuse to just do more Eric Garners.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like that guy got killed by the state for selling cigarettes. And it's like, if you make a black market for a cigarette that, for whatever reason, the poor community likes. I mean, this is the same thing when they criminalized drugs or, you know, mm-hmm. the CIA, you know, started the crack epidemic. It was explicitly to, you know, arrest and imprison and kill black people.
Right.
It's a single
reason. The reason that like those communities like menthol cigarettes is because they're the ones that menthol cigarettes have been marketed to. And if you talk to people who like know cigarettes, like people who I've talked to some people who have worked in the cigarette industry, people who work in cigarettes, sales, marketing, whatever, they basically either they like don't care or they smoke American Spirits because they know what goes into cigarettes every year. Mm. Like the formula for Newports, right, is one of the worst offenders of just like horrendous shit going in. Like all the shit that the anti-cigarette PSAs told you about when you were in grade school. Like
right.
There's tar and arsenic. Like it's that, but like times 100, and especially in the cigarettes that they market to black people and poor people in the inner city. And there's a reason that they do that. It's because they're the cheapest to make, because they're able to space it out with chemicals. And it's and now that they're trying to ban menthols altogether, it's a fucking technocratic solution that takes away people's choices instead of addressing the root causes of the problem, which is that these people have had an addictive thing marketed to them.
Yeah, by big business
that kills
that has been
them.
Allowed to operate for a century. It's fucking absurd, and I don't know. This one really pisses me off.
It's so stupid, and yeah, it's like
it's so on its face racist. Mm-hmm. Like it just feels so
the
like,
racist nanny state. Yeah, because everyone talks about like Democrats doing the nanny state, and it's like, what is more nanny state than being like this one specific cigarette not allowed anymore? Other cigarettes are allowed, and also alcohol and a million other things that are bad for you.
I mean, you know, even if it works, I guess, to their favor, like what is the thing? They just switch to Reds? Like they just switch to Marlboros or whatever?
Right,
or
yeah,
like
yeah.
I think that it'll be a very like disappointingly low percentage of people who just stop smoking because they can't get their brand. And the majority of people will just switch to a cigarette that's available. And like that's technocracy. That is literally it's a numbers game to them. It's like, oh, we decreased the number of people in this demographic that smoke cigarettes by 20%. What do you mean? The remaining 80% just switched to another type of cigarette? Well, let's find another technocratic solution. Let's just raise prices on cigarettes altogether. That'll solve the problem and not another black
tax
market.
Tax the poor.
Exactly.
And I mean, like we've been saying, like they're just trying to create another illegal thing to justify cop budgets, basically.
Yeah.
They're like, we need a thing for the police to harass black and brown and poor people for. And it's going to be menthol cigarettes if it's not weed. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's been the episode.
I'm going to go blast a cig.
Yeah, let's smoke some menthols in honor of Joe Biden.
I've never
Biden.
Even been a menthol guy. But if I wanted to buy a pack of menthols for that cool, refreshing, delicious taste, which, by the way, if you enter in code beep beep at checkout on the
you can go to Newport website.
It'd be very funny if like this episode gets flagged on Spotify too, and they're like, "You're not allowed to advertise cigarettes." Podcast is banned.
We're not really doing it.
Basically, society went downhill when they stopped letting people letting cigarette companies advertise on the side of race cars.
Can they remember that anymore? Damn.
Yeah, it's not allowed anymore.
This is so sad.
They won't let you smoke on a plane anymore.
also a harbinger of society's ultimate downfall.
Yep.
Let's get you to bed.
were there any 9/11s when you could smoke on a plane? I don't think so. And then they take that away and suddenly planes are flying into buildings left and right.
I mean, I remember back in like the 90s and early 2000s, planes still had ashtrays, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of those planes were built in the 70s and 80s.
They're not just going to buy new planes.
I'm going to Google. What am I made of planes?
Smoking on airplanes banned what year?
All right. Well, you looked at
September 10th, 2001.
1990? God.
I imagine that if somebody was like, oh my God, my plane that I'm riding on has been hijacked, but the no cigarette smoking sign is still lit up. And it's like, you know, if your plane is hurtling towards the ground, I feel like in those last 30 seconds, come on, just let him blast a cig.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to vape constantly on planes.
Same,
what are they
going
to do? Do they care?
Like,
yeah, they don't care.
Like, they don't notice. Yeah. You just, like, blow it into your shirt.
Some old busybody lady once, like, scolded me for doing it, and I was like, this is actually an inhaler.
You are
being ableist.
Oh, man, imagine the next move for Al-Qaeda, if they want to get people on their side, take over a plane and be like, we're commandeering the plane, the pilot is trussed up, but also you can smoke. Everyone would just cheer and start smoking.
Everybody can juul or smoke or whatever. Mm. We'll open the windows. It'll be nice.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, did you know these windows open? They're electric. I can control them all from the cockpit.
I think if they banned menthols, but they made smoking weed on planes legal,
there you go.
You mm-hmm. would be forced to hand it to them.
That's what I'm talking about.
You would
about.
Have to hand I mean, it to
you can
ISIS.
Smoke crack while driving, but you can't smoke menthols.
Pro That's tip, right. I already just eat all my weed right before I go through security. I'm high as shit the entire
there you
ride.
Go. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a powerful move.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to BB Bledis. This has been the regular episode. If you'd like to hear the bonus episode, go to patreon.com/BB Bledis, where you'll get a weekly extra episode, and you'll get access to the Discord and you know, other fun stuff. Also follow us at WeedPod on Twitter. Hang out with us in Mids posting on Facebook, and we will see you in the Discord.
Beep on, y'all.
Keep peeping.
Goodbye. Bye. Going down.